as time goes on, I get more and more like, man, I just want to like hide out in the unsexy shadows of B2B software where no one else wants to be.
One characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. It was grit.
And we're back.
All right. At the beginning of every episode, we have to like, now moving forward, we have to ask like, what are you drinking?
Oh, okay. I am drinking eggnog. 'Tis the season. I hate to admit, but it's also the pre-made. It's like the pre-mixed one. So it does have a little booze in it, but I did not make it.
Oh, it's got bourbon in it already?
Yes. And like rum and at least those two. It's like, I forgot, Evan Williams, I think. Like pre-made. It's dangerous.
Didn't you used to make eggnog? I feel like you made it once and gave us some.
I don't think I've ever made eggnog. No, I don't even, I have no idea what's in eggnog.
I could have sworn during the Rigger days that you made some sort of eggnog or Claire did or something and gave us one of the, you gave it to us in a mason jar. Eggnog? Maybe you bought it from someone. I don't know.
No. Oh, maybe you're thinking, wait, I don't think I ever gave you this. Are you thinking of like moonshine?
No.
We never made moonshine either for the record, but we did have some in a mason jar. I wonder.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I don't know. I thought you did, but anyways, I am drinking bourbon as well from ASW, which is a local Atlanta distillery. And I think they won the top
double
bourbon or something. Yeah, like double gold. Like, yeah. So it's pretty legit stuff. Anyways, your wife actually gave that to us.
That exact, one is that it duality, bottle. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That one is pretty amazing. If you're into that, it's like, because I'm not a big scotch drinker, but it's sort of like, it kind of walks the line between bourbon and scotch. So it's pretty good.
It's super smoky, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm into it.
So I'm doing that. I'm only halfway through. By the end of this podcast, I'll be all the way through. So we'll see what I'm saying at the end of this versus now. But I think that should be the way that we go now, is to always be drinking something at, what time is it? Like 8:30 at night is when we can do this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since that's our new time slot, it works out.
For real. Well, so there's been some, figured we hit on a couple of the happenings that are going on in the world. So there's been all these big acquisitions this week with Slack. Do you think it's going to suck now because it's owned by Salesforce?
I mean, it's one of those things where I'm like, I already feel like it doesn't suck like in terms of like the product user experience or whatever, but I'm just not a big like crazy Slack guy. So I would say if not monthly, like quarterly, I would just look at what other alternatives people are using. I do that like pretty routinely because I'm always looking for something that has a different take. But the problem is everything is integrated with Slack, and that's like actually how we use it mostly. So it kind of becomes like, what is the overhead for me to switch and like hook in all the tools that we have? And like, is that going to be like 45 Zapier zaps that I have to make or, you know, whatever. So that kind of is the, as they say, like integrations can be those sticky things. And that's how it is. That's how it is with Slack for me. Cause otherwise we barely use any of the Slack feature. It's like we do some DMing and we do a little like very light group chats, but like very light. And then otherwise it's just integrations. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's good for them, I guess. It makes sense to me, I guess. And like, it's nice to see someone who's not Google or Microsoft or Facebook or Apple or whoever, like, not that Apple would buy them, but not someone else that's not Amazon or whoever, like jumping in. And not that Salesforce is small, but it's kind of a different take on it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with it. Cause they've had like Salesforce had like the chatter feature or like product or whatever that I don't think has ever done very well. But this will definitely like, this is going to give Slack like so much potential distribution within especially a lot of these big enterprise companies. So it'll be good. I mean, it's definitely good for them, but I don't know how. I think there's probably an opportunity to build like a little like bootstrapped Slack alternative, but I know some people have tried that and it didn't go very well.
Yeah, it's just like adoption is so hard. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess actually the ones that were, well, the one that still exists is Todoist. Todoist has Twist. Mm-hmm. That's like the main one that is honestly like even you could consider, I think, switching to, because Atlassian made one, which I'm forgetting the name of, but they were working on one and then they sold
HipChat.
Like, well, they had HipChat. I think they bought
that. Oh, yeah.
And then they killed it and then they built something new like in the past year or two, but then they sold like some IP to Slack. and then shut it down. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's another company that would actually make sense to have something. But since they just sold their IP to Slack, I assume they weren't going to then turn around and acquire Slack. So
yeah. Yeah. And then Facebook bought Customer, which I kind of was aware, like I guess I've heard of it, but to me, it kind of looks like Intercom. Like it's a very similar product.
I definitely have come across it, but I know next to nothing about it.
I think it's more like it's kind of like an Intercom, but for, I think for like e-commerce or something. I don't know. Like it seems like it was slightly different, but it's kind of weird that Facebook is trying to get into that world.
I mean, yeah, the last thing Facebook needs is more data. But whatever. I don't know if I've made my views on this podcast clear, but I'm not a big Facebook fan, so to say the least.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would be good in terms of the Slack acquisition. I guess for people that are building on Slack, it could be good because now you all of a sudden can get into a lot more companies. So
yeah, I wonder too, like, what is it, Troops? Is that the like Salesforce Slack? Yeah. Like, do they, maybe they get something good out of this? I don't know. Or maybe they just get killed. I have no idea. But
they'll probably just get bought by Salesforce.
Like
at some point.
Throw a check your way or something and like shortcut our development of the Slack integration or whatever.
Well, the whole thing with that was that there wasn't, so Troops is like, it's a Slack app that basically allows you to do everything that you need to do in Salesforce, but do it inside of Slack. Which sounds kind of dumb, but apparently it's very popular. My wife uses it at Twilio. And I know Slack invested in them. I think Salesforce did too. But the whole point of their whole like pitch was basically everybody hates doing stuff in Salesforce. Salesforce doesn't have they don't have a mobile app. So all of a sudden Slack becomes like your Salesforce mobile app. Like totally different product becomes your Salesforce mobile app. Anyways,
I think that's like a pretty cool niche, although difficult because you're like bridging two big APIs, but kind of cool if you can find a business there. I will say, I think to me, it's like if you're spending all that, like I guess there's like a UX problem, right? Like if entering Salesforce data is partly, no one does it because it's like slow or clunky or not intuitive or too arduous or whatever. And then I guess there's also an element of like, you're already in Slack, so just do it in Slack. But I feel like those problems could be addressed separately, probably. Like, well, my viewpoint is like, spend less time in Slack. So you should probably just enter it in Salesforce. And then if that's a bad UX, like let's solve that. But
that is interesting. It's like a lot of people are playing, like, I mean, our friends down the street in Atlanta, Elatype, they're kind of doing the same thing, but for marketing data, I guess. So I don't know how people spend all their time in Slack all day, but I guess.
I just think like
some people do.
If I find myself, like, I think it's great. I mean, obviously this is how I use it. So this is how I see it fitting, but like it's great for like reading and conversing around, like sending notifications to and then conversing around those notifications. I don't think it's as good. Like, I don't want to use it for like input data entry. Like it just doesn't, it's like a modal with like all these form fields and stuff. It's just not, it's too pared down and like you're also getting distracted by all the other stuff that's happening inside the app. Like it just doesn't feel like the right place, but
yeah,
maybe that's just me.
Yeah. Crazy times. It seems like there's a lot of acquisitions going on and I'm assuming more are coming. There's some big IPO. I think Airbnb is about to IPO or something. There's like a bunch of them. It's just like kind of crazy, crazy times.
I'd love to see like some of the other like collaboration video tools, like love to see their adoption install and, you know, collaborate, like what their metrics look like over COVID. Like the ones I'm thinking of are Tandem, which I think was a Y Combinator company, even like Whereby, kind of the like paid lightweight alternative to Zoom, I guess. Like, I wonder what their businesses have looked like through this time.
I'm sure they're crushing it.
It would have to be great, but like,
yeah,
I know a lot of them too are like giving stuff away for free and all that. So who knows how that'll play out.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, in our world, I know we got a couple things topics we wanted to chat about, but I guess like in our own world, it's mostly just been getting our new product out the door, Bump, which is an app for Intercom, and it's been going pretty well. So I don't know our exact numbers, but I know that this is the fastest we've ever gotten to like 10 paid customers, and we have more than 10 paid customers, but it was the fastest we've ever gotten with any of our products to 10 paid. And obviously, I guess it's not like super far below like from a pricing standpoint than some of our other products. But yeah, it's been pretty cool to see that adoption, and also to see us get better at making money faster and getting customers faster every time that we seem to do it. So all this entrepreneurship stuff takes practice. You're not just going to like do it on the first, like just crush it on the first run. You might, but it's probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, it's been cool. And like, I think we talked about this on a previous episode, but it's like, kept the scope smaller and try to just get something out the door and start charging. Well, we actually started charging like right as we got the first version out the door. So yeah, it's working pretty well. And I think that's like also learning not only how to just build and ship products people want and are willing to pay for, but specifically on top of a platform too, and like different ways to like attack that.
For sure. Well, that kind of leads into some of our topics. So I know one of the things we both listened to a lot of podcasts of other like bootstrappers and different folks like that. And it seems like one thing we wanted to talk about was like every time that we listen to some of these things, it seems like there's a lot of similar things that we see that seem kind of weird to us, I guess. One of which is a lot of bootstrappers, they don't give things enough time. So we've been like, that's something I've seen, is that people don't tend to give things enough time to actually like iterate enough to the point where you can actually build a business. People are so into just like working on side projects or working on projects or whatever, and just getting something out the door and like being all public about it and like, ooh, rah, rah, this is cool, I did this, versus like trying to like continuously iterate and build like an actual business. And so what do you think about on that topic? What do you think about building in public?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like more broadly, I would say there's levels to this, as they say. I think it's like so many things. It depends. If from what I can tell, there's a ton of people. I think on a positive note, there's a ton of people building products and trying to start businesses, whether it's info products or SaaS businesses or whatever. It seems like that's just happening more and more. I also am so in a bubble in this way, so like maybe this is not happening as much as I think it is, but with like the no code movement and all that stuff, it feels like more and more people are giving a shot at like trying to spin up like a business of some kind, which is awesome. And then within that, I think there's some people who are like gainfully employed and they're trying to start something on the side to maybe ultimately transition, or just to have some like extra cash, or just to learn and grow and learn new stuff. So like, I guess the goal, what is your goal for doing all these things? I think maybe not everyone, like in our case, we wanted to start a business and have it sustain our lives. So like that kind of frames the whole, how you approach it. And we didn't have jobs. So that was like, gave you some extra fire, I guess. But I think like building in public, I think it's cool. Like I benefit from it in certain ways. And I've actually been thinking like recently that I've gone through phases with, I mean, I pretty much only use Twitter in terms of social media, but I've gone through phases where I tweet more or less, and I haven't really been much of a producer on Twitter in a while. I've just been consuming. And I was thinking I should probably like not try harder to tweet, but like whether it's Twitter or a blog or whatever, but sort of like I have a lot of, I think about this stuff all the time, and that's kind of where the podcast comes into, but I think about a lot of the stuff and I have opinions or ideas or whatever. And so I do want to make more of an effort to try to like have some of that, put some of that out into the world. So I think building in public is cool because I benefit from seeing that stuff, like ways people approach things, or like, I'm just trying to do this as fast as I can, or I'm trying to keep the scope as small as I can, or I'm going to build this thing for 6 months until it's completely done. And like, you can see all these different approaches, screenshots. It's kind of like the open startups thing where you can see people's revenue, and like Buffer was sharing like everyone's salaries and all that stuff. Like I benefited from that.
Yeah, I like that stuff too when it's not me.
But yeah, exactly. I wouldn't do all of that stuff necessarily, but it's also like it has value. I don't know how much to the businesses themselves. I'm not sure or the people, the makers or whoever. I don't know how much value it has. And that's the other part of it, is I definitely see people building in public and like building up followings on various platforms. And I think like I actually remember probably 5 years ago, so whenever there was like a period where I definitely was more active on Twitter and I was writing blog posts, I was doing more frequent stuff. And like, just by default, you start getting more followers because you just have like more stuff happening. And it's sort of like that vanity metric thing where it's like, oh, this feels kind of nice. But at least for what we're doing, it's like, it doesn't really have any really inherent value per se.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that but it goes back to what you said before. Why are you starting this? Like, why are you building a business or like a product or whatever? I think a lot of people aren't doing it for the reason that you said you're doing it. Or like our reason from the beginning was like, build our own thing, like build our own business so that we can get it to the point where like it like gives us the same kind of income that we may have been receiving prior to starting the business. And like then being like from there, just like, I guess they call it like default alive, or like from there, it's just like freedom to do whatever. But so that's like our goal. But a lot of these people, I feel like the goal is not like, that's not their goal at all. They may say that, but every action they take with all this, with all that they're doing, like to me spells out that they're just looking for like clout basically.
Yeah. I think it, and that's the other part is like, that is a product, right? So
it can be,
I don't know if it's intentional or just like people meander their way toward that or something, but you know, it's like the people who become like the kingmakers or whatever, or like you're selling info products and you want to build an audience so that you have people to build an audience of people who might care about what you have to say. There's always like there's always a risk of becoming the person who like sells an info product on a topic where you've like moved around, like you did a lot of movement, but you never actually really progressed. And then having like this course or whatever that talks about like how to ship products. And it's like, well, you know, maybe there's some value to that depending on how you pitch it. But also if it's how to ship products that no one uses or buys, like, I don't know if that's useful. So it's kind of like snake oil at that point in some cases. So I don't know.
I have noticed that a lot of the people that do more of the kind of, or that we're doing like the open startup type stuff and being really transparent, like stop doing it at some point. Like pretty much all of them. Like even Buffer, who was kind of leading that charge, they're like, eh, this is not a good idea. Well, we shouldn't be like telling everyone who like how much everybody else makes.
Yeah.
Like obviously that is good, that because it leads to transparency and stuff, but it also causes like a bunch of like shit you have to deal with.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too to think about it for specifically around that topic. Like you can be completely private such that no one knows anything even within the company. You can be completely public, so like the whole world knows every little thing, or you know, somewhere in between. And I'm sure most companies fall somewhere in between. But it's interesting to think about like a company like Buffer, if they ended up, you know, keeping that stuff, if they, you know, made salaries public within the team, but not actually public. Because I can see value to that, but I can see downsides to that. And I think one big part of it, even regardless of like the second and third order effects of having that stuff out there, like you said, like if you're saying like, this is how much we grew and here's our revenue and here's our salaries and here's our costs, like obviously the competitors or people who are potentially considering that, like it could have some weird second and third order effects on your business. But even before that, it's like, at some point is the time spent creating all those, like at some point that becomes the job, like for at least someone's job to just produce artifacts. And I feel like that with building in public, like tools like Loom and stuff can make it pretty easy. So like maybe the overhead is not too bad. But if you find yourself like producing all these highly edited videos and books and whatever else about like building this thing, it's like suddenly those become the thing you're building, right? Which isn't necessarily bad, but it just, you might want to like recognize that and see if that's what you want to be spending your time on.
Yeah. I mean, as we've been doing all of this, I feel like at first I wanted to be more transparent and like talk about the things we were doing. And like we've done it a little bit on the podcast in the past. But the more that I do this, like the more that we're in this whole game, the less I want to share about like what, like how things are going for us. I mean, just even just for like all the copycats, like there's so many people looking, like they're looking for ideas that seem to be working for other people and just like copying everything they do. And obviously, you know, you're not going to be able to avoid that completely, but I don't know. I feel like it's better to just kind of like, I don't know, hold your cards closer to your chest and just like keep grinding away and like keep building and growing the business and the revenue without necessarily having to tell everybody what it is all the time.
Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know, I think there's also an element of, it also becomes kind of trite or like repetitive and stuff too. To hear, like, I think it can be super valuable. I felt like that listening to other Bootstrapper podcasts and stuff, where it almost feels like therapy or something, where you can like tune into someone's moment in time where they share their struggle or whatever they're working up against or whatever they're dealing with. And it makes you feel like you have like a community of people doing the same stuff. And I think that's very valuable. But also, like, you know, I don't know, that doesn't have to be every conversation. And I think, like you said, over time, as we've done this podcast, I feel like I'm finding more value from, like, I can find some of that same space, but with just people that I actually know. And so it's like, it's almost like maybe not a formal mastermind, but it's like you have the podcast where you talk openly and it's publicly available. You have, you know, your internal company where you talk about whatever you talk about. And then maybe the thing in the middle is like a small group of people that you actually trust and like can share more details with. And actually they have more context around your actual life and business. And I think that's kind of where I've come to land on that. So I think it's still useful to pick out little things like experiments that worked or challenges that are particularly difficult and share those on the podcast, but not, you know, a weekly report on revenue and costs.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I just think it's, I don't know. To me, I would rather like work on things that are sort of in niche places and kind of like hide out there and like make a lot of money and build a good business without anybody really knowing how well things are going, just to like stay away from the bringing more people to that like competitive landscape. I'm not interested.
And I think too, it depends, like, you know, if the people that listen to this podcast are people that we're also trying to like, you know, sell to, or like sell them a book or sell them some software, right, about how to make MVP product or whatever, then like, fine. I also just, my first thing when I see a lot of that is like, I'm always worried that someone's conflating like a Twitter following or like a YouTube hits or whatever as like some sort of metric. Like, it's a measure of like growth, and obviously having, if you have like a million followers, like there are ways to find ways to make money, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's not the same thing as like having a successful product or business, because like most businesses don't have, like their Twitter handles don't even have like 100 followers. Like, no one cares, right? Especially right. B2B software. No one cares.
Yeah.
So if you're out there doing it, first of all, if you're building in public, I will say like it is cool to see. And like, I also appreciate the effort that has to go into producing artifacts that you can share with people, because I know that takes work. And I can benefit from seeing like how different people do different stuff. And the things I think about too are like more of the like courses and tutorial sites. It's almost like they're building in public, but their product is just a bunch of projects. And then they sell a subscription to like watch me build like a blog on Ruby on Rails. And then like you subscribe to learn how to do it, as opposed to like them trying to build a blog and monetize it.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it is more for like personal brand or something.
Which I think that's the whole thing is like, as long as everyone, it makes me worried when you see certain people get a voice and they become influential in certain circles and they start to have a lot of success. They obviously, that can attract people to try to emulate them, but you have to make sure that you're emulating them, like you're on the same path. Like if I'm selling, like even like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example without like naming names, but it's like, if you're selling books, then building up an audience of people that follow you that are probably going to buy your book, like that's probably a good strategy. But like if we're selling B2B software for specific departments within specific types of companies, like having everyone who listens to this podcast like see what we're doing, other than it just being interesting, it's like not valuable to the business at all.
Right. Yeah. I would be very surprised if we had any of our customers for maybe even both products, but specifically Ad Reform, that listens to this podcast.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was just thinking the Product Hunt is another one. Product Hunt is another one where it's like, it's all, you know, I would say, you know, mostly the same type of people. If you ask someone on the street, like, have you been to Product Hunt? Like, they have no idea what you're talking about, right? So it's mostly the same type of people. And if you're marketing to those people, if your product is aimed at those people, then it's perfect. Like something like Notion or whatever is going to have a good launch, and that launch might actually lead to actual users. Something like our businesses, it's like launch it on Product Hunt, no one cares. Like,
Yeah. I mean, oh man, it would be rough to sell to like other bootstrappers. I feel like I wouldn't want to sell. I don't know. To me, like as time goes on, I get more and more like, man, I would just want to like hide out in the unsexy shadows of B2B software where no one else wants to be. Like go to these different little corners of the world where nobody's at and just go there and build stuff there and stay away from all the popular competitive markets.
And it's not just because, like, I think if you invert that, the same thing is true, but you invert the way you're thinking about it. It's like, instead of trying to avoid all the hot spots and, you know, popular spots, it's like, there's like a sea of things that go unsolved. So it's like, if you invert the way you're thinking about it, it's the same outcome, which is like, instead of going the same place where everyone's going, like you can find weird little pockets where no one is and like easily solve problems and get customers.
There's so many. It's like, it's so insane how, like, I mean, I think it's one of the problems that, I mean, it's something I fight all the time of like wanting to do other stuff constantly because it's fun, but also because like, there's so many different opportunities everywhere all the time. And you don't really know, you don't have any data, so you don't really know like which one of those is like the right one to work on. But there's still like, there's tons of opportunities. You don't know if it's going to be the opportunity that gives you like a 100K business or $1 million business or 10 million or 50 million, 100 million if you're Taupe at Calendly.
Yeah.
if only we were.
I think it's, on that note too, it's like, I think that's why people talk about solving your own problem, because on its own, that may be not a great filter, right? Like I might have some very niche problem that literally only I care about, and or maybe I solve it in some way that it'll only work for me ever, and that's not going to be a good business. But I think like coupled with some awareness, if not like actual insight and data around a problem that has a market of some size, if you couple that together with like some opinion on it, I think that's the sweet spot, because you can execute a lot faster.
You can definitely execute faster, but there's one downside is like, specifically for us, we were entrepreneur, like small SaaS entrepreneurs, bootstrappers. So the things that we are solving problems for are likely the things that other entrepreneurs have problems around. So you end up in that, like the things that are fun for us to work on or build, because they're like our problems, like the other people that have those problems are all similar to us, which are people that don't have like funding and like don't, you know, have smaller companies. And then because there's so many of those people, like they're all trying to build, they're all like, yeah, I want to build something that I like to work on and that I have, you know what I mean? So like you just, that's why you end up with like so many people in this space of like selling to other software companies or entrepreneurs, bootstrappers.
Yeah,
and it, you think not only do
like,
they not
that's
have,
what I know, so that's who else.
Exactly. Not only do those people not have like, they don't have a lot of money and they're usually more stingy with it, but now you have like tons of competitors also in that arena.
Yeah, I think
so. It's just like, whoa,
I'm thinking
like,
more about
not the place I want to be.
Yeah, I'm thinking more about the one, like coming from some sort of day job typically, you know, where you've like lived through some experience of like, wow, that was weird. This should be better. I'm going to go start a company to like make that thing better. And then you're tackling like some problem in some like arcane industry where software hasn't penetrated yet or something like that. That's the sweet spot. Cause it's like, if you are aware that it's a big enough niche, or at least you can charge enough money for it, then you can build like a business that can pay for your life. And also you have an opinion and some like head start on how to actually solve it. So.
Yeah, that's what I always get anxiety around, like the fact that we're very much like in a little bubble, like we're a few people on the team. So very small team. So our organizational problems are like very different from, you know, a lot of companies. Sometimes I worry that we're not getting into enough, we're not experiencing enough. Like in the, like you mentioned, like if you were at this other, you know, bigger company and you like notice this problem in this certain space, and you know, if you can solve that, you can solve it for all the other companies that are that big. I worry sometimes that we're not like experiencing those things quite enough like we did before, like when we were at Rigor, we were selling to a bunch of like big brands, right? Like these big companies. So you kind of got to, like, we sold them one thing, but you got to sort of like see a little bit of a landscape of like maybe like types of things that they would buy and how their organizations work internally. And so you can spot like different opportunities and stuff. Like now, I feel like sometimes we don't get to see as much as that of that as I would like to see or experience, so that we have, you know, more ideas around different business opportunities later on.
Yeah, I think it depends on how you think about it. I mean, on one hand too, I would say like the opportunities we thought we were aware of, we never even did. So like, you know, it was like enough of a motivating factor to like try to like solve some problem, but we ended up solving different problems and that became the business. So at the end of the day, like whatever we came in with didn't actually matter that much. Obviously knowing who to talk to was a big thing. And I would say like, I think I don't think you can do too much of what you just said, you know, assuming that you're actually still working on your actual business and not just spending time scouting the whole time. But I think we do, given the circumstances, small team, especially now where like you're not even visiting people on site or anything because of the pandemic and stuff. So like given the circumstances, I think we're actually pretty good, at least maybe we could do a better job of like explicitly seeking like, hey, that is like the stated goal of like this meeting or this call or whatever. We could probably do a better job of that. But within our day to day, I feel like we build an entire product around the concept of like every customer conversation, an opportunity to like learn and understand instead of support as like burden that we're trying to close tickets. You know, I mean, I think we've gotten like to the point where I would say a lot of people would call us crazy for spending the amount of time we do and like going as far as we do. And there definitely is a line somewhere that maybe we've crossed in terms of like, you know, diminishing returns, I guess. But I think we're, you know, when given an opportunity to talk to potential customers or existing customers, I feel like we're pretty good at digging. I mean, that's how we built Bump in the first place. So also
talking to just like total, well, that's the thing that sucks now is that you don't really get to see people as much anymore because of COVID, but like meeting different people and like talking to different people about like what the heck they do in their life, like what they're
like conferences.
You know, what's your job? Basically. Well, like, yeah. Or like, I mean, I don't know. It could be like over Thanksgiving and like, yeah, you know, some new family member or something. And you're like, oh, what's your job? Like, what industry are you in? Oh, you're in this. Like, what are the I don't know, like digging more into like people that are in other spaces and just learning about like, you know, what their challenges are and how their businesses operate and all that kind of, how their different roles like internally operate within the team. That stuff is super helpful to finding other opportunities that you can, you know, build products around. I saw something today. What's the funny guy, the funny CEO, the box guy?
Oh,
what's his name?
Aaron,
yeah.
Aaron Levy or Levy.
He wrote some blog on, he was talking about the Slack acquisition to Salesforce and how this was like going to change everything. I was like, what, why? So I ended up going through the whole thing, but he was saying that like 90% of like the businesses in the world are not using like any software still. Like, yeah, we're in like, no, the,
I
mean, first,
I don't
inning.
Doubt it. And when you encounter one, like as a software person, it's,
you're like, what?
Like, not that software solves all the problems, but like when you encounter, I guess, the combination of a business that's clearly not using software and a business that clearly should be, and there's like 50,000 options for just like plug and play project management tools they could be using, it's hard to watch.
Yeah. But I think that's like, that lays out the opportunity for the next 10 to 20 years where all of those people that have been in the, you know, work for those industries where none of that is like, you know, the 90% of companies that still aren't using like, you know, software tools or cloud-based software or whatever, a lot of those people that run those companies are going to be retiring, and younger people who all have been using software and different things are going to be taking over those positions. So like the next 10 to 20 years is going to be like, I mean, the way he was saying, he was like, it's going to be insane. Like, this is the first inning. We're about to go through the next, like, you know, 8 innings here in the next 10 to 20 years of software. And it's going to be like massive because people are going to start adopt. Like, it's just going to, and like, I mean, he was going to the Salesforce use case too. Like, he was saying like, there's a lot of companies that only the only software they use is like Salesforce. And now they're going to be using like Slack and all these different things, and they're going to, you know, see all the ways that it can affect their business in a good way. But it just, it leaves open so many, there's just so much opportunity out there, especially, I mean, that 90%, those are like kind of, these are like the less sexy niches of the world that's why they're unsexy. That's why it hasn't been touched by software. So it's, I don't know, there's a lot of really good opportunities, but you just have to like talk to customers and talk to random people and like just find out more about their businesses and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, kind of related to the building in public thing too, another, like, I guess you got me thinking, because when you have a business, at least of some certain size, that you're really, you're committed to at some level, it seems like the most obvious thing to do is just to try to stay close to your customers, not just to like iterate, maybe obviously to iterate on your current product and like do that, but even just to spot tangents that maybe you never pursue, but maybe you do. And then if you're just starting out and you're sort of like hopping from thing to thing really fast, like you'll never get to that point. So that's like a downside. But the flip side is like, you're also learning a lot at each turn, whether it's just technology or marketing or shipping or scope or, you know, whatever it is. Those projects, even if they're just completely dead in the water, like maybe they still have value to your trajectory. So
yeah, for sure.
That's like another thing I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, I think it is good to like play around in different spaces and kind of learn about those. And cause also, if you don't like experiment a little bit in some different areas, whether you're having success or not, like you're not going to ever know like what could have been. I mean, for all, like, I don't know, you can hit on something. If you don't give it a chance, you don't like experiment at least a little bit, like with some of your time, you're never going to know what you could have had. I mean, that's why we've kind of done it. Like, we played around and done, you know, built other products and other businesses. Some have been successful to some extent and some have not. And you got to like try it out. And each of those different times that you're trying different things helps you to kind of refine your skills. And like I said earlier in the call, like we've been able to get to 10 customers faster every single time that we've done it. And so it just takes some refining.
Yeah, I think too, it's like when I think back to the beginning of Ad Reform, like we quit our jobs and like we were full time, and it's not like it happened super quick. Like I think we got our first version out fairly quickly, all things. Like we did a bunch of prospective customer conversations, built an MVP, like followed the whole playbook, so to speak, and like started getting paying customers fairly fast. But that's different from getting to the point where you can actually put food on the table. So I think about if we had like 6 months in decided to, this isn't going as fast as we want, let's do something else. Like, it's hard to know, because maybe the thing we would have done would have been better. But to me, there's some element of that ramp that you just have to like get through. Even if some products have like a steeper slope or a shallower slope, like you're going up the ramp and it's going to take some time. And if you keep stopping and starting, like you would have been better off just staying the course. And the flip side of that is that we built a product completely different from the one we had. And like, we didn't build it in a vacuum, because like we built it based on our experiences trying to use products in that world and our experience like with the platform Intercom. But it wasn't like a super lean startup-y path. We just kind of like made it. So I don't know, it can go all sorts of directions. I think it's one of those things that's hard to like call. I think my main thing is like just knowing what your goal is. If like in our case, our goal is to build a business that can, you know, stay alive on its own, and then ultimately, obviously, hopefully give us, you know, money to spend and give us maybe freedom to work on other things. So luckily so far we've kind of gotten to that point. But
I mean, we didn't mention it, but like that's like a goal that I've had in the very beginning. Your goal is just to like, how do I just get this like off the ground to some extent and like get some, you know, a little bit of revenue in the door and get some sort of traction and get going. But one of the kind of the big goals like this entire time was like to get to like where we can just pay ourselves like just a normal, like what we would, you know, likely be making if we weren't doing this, or what we were making before. And we finally have hit that like this year. This will be like the first time that we've hit. So we're 4 years in. So back to the patience side of things. Like you definitely you need to be patient. Like expect, one of those books says like you need like 1,000 days or something. So 1,000 days to like get to the point where you're really like firing on all cylinders and like making like legitimate money or like market rate. I forgot what book that was. I think it was like the 4-Hour Work Week or one of those kind of books. But yeah, so I mean that was pretty much on target with like with us, because it was about in between like year three, year four, which is where we were like, now we can pay ourselves what our normal market rate salary.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things too. With even within that, there's all sorts of choices that happen, like hiring, spending, like conservation. Because I mean, that's something we've talked about before, but we've been pretty conservative with cash, and I think like there's a balancing act there. But obviously, going in with the pandemic, when all that stuff started up, it felt like I was glad we were that way. But sometimes you're like, oh, well, technically, it's sort of like when you're like with a friend and they're, you're like, let's fly to Europe together. And they're like, I can afford it. It's like, you never really know what that means to different people. Like people are willing to like run, everyone has their own sort of buffer that they're comfortable with running. Like, do I have $5 in my checking account? Like, is that where you want to be? Or are you someone who wants to have like 5,000 sitting, a pad somewhere? So
yeah,
it's hard to know like within that. But yeah, I think regardless of how you fall on that spectrum, yeah, it's going to take time. And if you're trying to build like an audience, there's also value to that, like kind of indirect value that you may never explicitly become aware of, but even just meeting people and talking to people, like, random DMing people on Twitter and like connecting with them, and maybe you work together one day, or maybe you, I don't know, who knows? That's like almost the serendipity you were talking about lacking in some ways, is like it's happening on the internet. You have to just kind of like carve it out, but
right,
it's still not quite the same.
Yeah, I saw there was like an argument on Twitter about like, is it better to have, 2% of a multi-billion dollar outcome in business, or like, 50% or 100% of something that sold for, $10 million. Or something like that. And so there was this argument or whatever. Before, I would have just been like, yeah, definitely the $10 million one. Like, I'll do that. But there's some good points to like going the other route, or at least somewhere in the middle of that. Even if you own less of the business, like if you are like fairly early in your career, like you are building a business and like a much bigger business that's impacting a lot more people, and also I would assume you'd be interacting with a lot more people and customers, so that like down the line when you are building other things, other businesses, like you've got this huge network of people that you've built relationships with, interacted with, that were your customers, potentially thousands of, tens of thousands of people that were your customers, and then that all of a sudden becomes like a launching pad for whatever that, your next thing is that you're doing. So
yeah, I can see.
I don't know. There's pros and cons.
Yeah, I can see that, but it feels like that play. And I guess that maybe it's shifting with more of the like alternative funding things that are happening. But it feels like that typically just means you're now just doing that track. Like maybe you have a bit more leverage the second time around, and you obviously know who to call on to like raise your first round of funding, and like all that just happens at launch. Or like you see those like, hey, I'm building a company, here are all my investors. Like that's all lined up. We don't have to. Like we didn't have to spend, 18 months convincing some guy to give us a check or whatever. I feel like it shortcuts all that stuff. If you're going to go from, there's still obviously value to having a big network and potentially, even if you go bootstrapper route on the second time. But like my first thought when you talk about that, those two options is just, we're only looking at it at the end. So it's like, you just sold a business. Was it this kind or that kind? But to me, like, what was the path? Like, what was the day-to-day life? Cause that's not something at a certain point, I'm like, I'm not willing to trade much for like if I only own 2% or less of the company I started, it probably means there's like hundreds of, if not thousands of people working there, tens of people, if not hundreds, like giving me input all day. There's probably like the noisiest Slack channel ever, all this manufactured stress, all these people yelling at you. Like, you probably aren't that close to the actual production work that you actually enjoy, in my case. So like, that's the first thing I think about. Like, totally, I totally agree with you that there's kind of these less tangible benefits of having this big splash, like whether it's some B2C thing or it's just like you're really ingrained in this thing and you have a ton of people that you can call on. Like, there's obviously value to that, but
yeah,
it just feels like if you traded a bunch of your, you know, 20s and 30s to get there, like that's not, I don't know if that, I'm willing to do that or not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the right play would be like keeping a smaller business, but having, you know, the kind of business where you have like tens of thousands of customers. The network side of things for future businesses definitely has a compounding effect that is hard to see right now, but you know, 10 years from now could pay, like could come in, you know, in handy. That we're just, you know, right now you just don't see it, but like when you're working with all these different people over time and you start building other businesses in like similar spaces or with similar audiences, it can really help kind of get you off the ground with that next thing. And you could boost, like at that point you could bootstrap and you have this huge audience already.
Well, and you have the surface area of like things you're aware of, or at least could become aware of, is way, way bigger. Like getting back to what we were talking about before. So if you have 10,000 customers, that's like 10,000 people you could be talking to hear, and they might all work at, you know, in different industries or who knows. Find the common problems, find the unique problems, find like those little intersections in the middle of all those things. And like, so, but at the same time, that's a lot of noise. So like maybe having, you know, 10, having, I don't know, 100 customers that you know really well might be better depending on what you're trying to do, but.
Totally. Well, yeah, I don't know.
It depends, I guess.
Yeah. But I think about that a lot. But I mean, it's, again, like it's all, and maybe I think about it because I'm like, that's sort of the role that I've kind of had in business forever, which is basically like engaging with customers in one way or another. So I don't know. I think about that a lot. It's like, how do we do as much as we can now when we're younger so that, you know, hopefully when we're still building businesses 10 years from now, like it's a lot easier then. Not even just easier in terms of like we've just built up a lot of skills and we've experienced a lot of things, good and bad, and we sort of like have a little bit better roadmap of what we should be doing and how, but also like a really like solid network to just jump in and get feedback from or get new customers from and make that beginning process just a lot easier. Because like we just did that basically. To some extent with Bump, right? You have this network. It was way easier to sell some of our earlier deals because like all the people, we had relationships with all these people in a similar audience and they trusted us already based on things we've built in the past and like their interactions with us. And so that just makes it a lot easier to get going versus like you look at ad reform, we got going. It was like, we kind of knew nobody.
Yeah. Well, we knew more than a lot of people did.
We got people that would talk to us to give us feedback, but when it came to like actually figuring out who our actual customer base was for that product, it was like zero overlap, pretty much.
Well, I was just thinking to
start from zero.
Like I was almost thinking about this on a like from a personal standpoint. I think, I mean, obviously different. Everyone has like, not everyone's the same, but this is my personal take. Like I also think about it from a personal standpoint. So, well, in software, especially, I think there's like this, the like TechCrunch effect or whatever, where it's like, obviously everyone wants to talk about like the funding rounds and like the number of users and all that junk. And it becomes like scale is like everything, right? Can it scale? Will it scale? Are you at scale? Like whatever.
Get on the scale.
So it's all about scale. Like if you're not, if you don't have like tens of thousands of customers and all this stuff, or like tens of thousands of employees or whatever the number is, whatever the metric is. Like you're not, it's like, it doesn't count. I think there are people who, I would say it's probably less than it was, but I think that's still like, especially when you're coming up, that's kind of like what the industry puts out there. Whereas like, if you're a company that has like I don't know, 100 users that never quit. They literally have been with you for like 10 years and they pay you good money and you know them like by name. That's pretty sweet, right? So obviously those are completely different, but if you flip it to like a personal side, it's interesting to think about it that way. Like, would you rather have, you know, you globetrot, you've been around the world, you've been to every continent or something, you have 100 friends in every country that you've been to or whatever. It's sort of like, who do you call? Like, do you want to have that? Or do you want to have like, I never leave my house, but I have 15 people that would literally do anything for me and I would do anything for them. I don't think it's a one size fits all. I just think it's interesting to think about it. It's not this exact same thing, but it got me thinking about it when you brought up Bump, because we obviously don't have tens of thousands of customers, but we have the people we talk to all the time. Like, we know really, really well that we were like DMing with them, like in a Slack channel in some Slack group, and like hopping on screen shares and like doing all this stuff as if we were like, we're actually like colleagues in some way, or sort of like, you're more than just a customer ID that I'm trying to close your ticket. So like, if we had tens of thousands of customers, we probably never would have had the bandwidth to like uncover that, because it wouldn't be feasible to keep doing that. So
yeah, I mean, it's definitely good to, I mean, that goes to like reputation too, which again is like a compounding thing. But that to me is really important too, that we keep sort of a good reputation for building good products, giving really good support to customers, like always wanting to learn more from them and like talk to them one-on-one to get feedback, like having that reputation that we have with the like all the users that we work with for things that we don't even know we're going to need down the line, you know, in 10 years, right? Like some other business that we've started, and now right off the bat we have all these people we can go to for feedback and they trust us and they tell other people about us. Like, it all has compounding effects. So
totally.
Also, that goes to like, if you're just building a bunch of little things and then you're just like stopping after you build it, like if you're not giving things enough time and effort, it's going to be hard for that compounding effect to take place, you know, 10 years down the road. So yeah, there's some happy medium between like giving something enough time and then, you know, just being able to like get away from something quickly if it's not working.
You bring up an interesting point, which is, I guess, keeping up with your coworkers and stuff in some degree, or those that you care to, is a thing that people do, but that typically is a little more natural. It's interesting to think about like making deliberate choices about how to stay in contact with customers that they may churn, or you may quit, or you may sell your business, or whatever the situation is. Like, it's interesting to think about anticipating those moments and trying to have like people that you actually enjoy talking to or think you have like mutual benefit. Like, how do you, I guess LinkedIn is like what people use, but it's interesting to think about like trying to be more thoughtful, because I also like hate, I never go on any of that stuff, so I never do that. But I'm like, I've talked to these people for hours, you know what I mean? Like, I've talked to some of these people more than I talk to like my own family members in a given week or month. So it's interesting to think that you'll just never talk to them again. maybe I should go and request a bunch of people.
Yeah. I mean, I still try to, I don't go out of my way to like go like find somebody on LinkedIn and reach out to them and be like, hey, what's up? How are you? Like, that maybe, you know, somebody I worked with at Rig or something, I wouldn't do that, but I'll like comment on, you know, random stuff that they post on LinkedIn,
like little pulse type stuff, like, hey,
yeah, up? Just like little things that like kind of like stay around and like acknowledge that both of us still exist and that we once knew each other.
yeah
from a working capacity.
I'm thinking I should just have a little tool that if I have like more than X conversations with you in Intercom, like it just finds your LinkedIn and like I auto request you or something. Like, if I've talked to you for some amount of time, like it just auto connects us.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I still do that. And every now and then somebody will reach out. Like, we had like someone we sold to at CNN. He's like works at a podcasting company now. And he reached out and he was like interested. And he's like, can you build this certain pod? Like, he came to us asking like if we could build something, because he just like, I guess we have like a good reputation in terms of like being able to like build useful products and they like working with us and engaging with us. So he like reached out and asked, like wanted to tell us about his like use case, even though we don't do anything in the podcast industry other than this podcast. Yet. Yeah. I don't know about that. It's too hot. To me, again, that's too hot of a space.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in that world unless I'm the first person in it.
Or I have some,
I don't even know.
Like I don't have enough context to like think of something cool. Like I haven't spent any time in that world, so I have no idea. Like there's probably some cool stuff in there, but like I certainly wouldn't be the one who would know. So
yeah, that's another topic. The whole niches, or what's the other thing? Like riding the wave. What are all these things that all these people are talking about? I can't keep up. I'm getting like burnt out on
analogies,
keeping up on all these, just all the Twitter stuff.
On that note, I know we're like way over time, so we should probably wrap up. But if you haven't, I know I've said this before. I probably have said it on here, but Male Brew is like the best thing, so you should use it. I think I have a referral link or something I can dig out, but like it's the coolest thing to like curate your own like content sources and funnel them into your life at a schedule that works for you, and so you don't feel like the FOMO kind of thing of like just going like I'm not going to get on Twitter for 10 days, but you also don't feel like the river of crazy that is social media. So
yeah, I still need to check it out. I haven't.
It's pretty sweet.
I haven't done it. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm stalling because I'm feeding my Twitter addiction by just getting on my phone and swiping.
Well, it's interesting too, though. Possibly. Like as I've used Male Brew a lot, I'm like, it's not only does it help curb that feed frenzy, but it also, I think, is more effective. It depends on your goal. If your goal is to just like waste time, then like nothing will work better than like going to a feed and swiping down. But it actually works better because if you just go to Twitter at any given moment and like see what's there, it's like you might miss some cool stuff from people you actually care about. Whereas if you have this curated thing that like sends you from specific people, then you're actually going to see like what they had to say. So it actually works out.
But I forgot to ask you one thing. Did you buy any Bitcoin?
No, I did not buy Bitcoin.
Remember we had this conversation like 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, about all
the last time Bitcoin it went to like 20K or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I never sold mine. I kept it all, and it went down to like basically nothing. And now,
well, it was like nine or something. How low did it go? I actually don't even remember.
Bitcoin,
I can't remember in the past like 3 years. I feel like it didn't go down like too far, but it was pretty roller coaster.
I think it went down to like
3 or 4, maybe.
Yeah, like something around 3.
If only there was a computer I could look this up. But
a lot of people are saying that. Here we go. A lot of people are saying that it'll go up to like 500,000. Because they're equating it to gold and thinking that it's a better alternative.
My first cynical comment is like, how much Bitcoin do those people have? It's like when, you know, Warren Buffett gives you stock tips or something. I'm like, is this what you're actually doing, or are you just moving the market now? So I don't know. But I mean, yeah, I think it's hard to know. Also, it's still not a great, like, depending on when you bought into it, it's still not a great return at this point. But hey, if you got your money there, just keep it there, right?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do with that stuff.
The pandemic definitely makes it more intriguing, just as like this sort of like out of band asset class that has no direct tie to like all the crazy stuff that's happening. So,
well, they said, I heard somebody say that the big metric that they looked at that was like very surprising and also like good for crypto or Bitcoin is the amount of people that are buying and selling right now versus what it was at its peak 3 years ago. Like it was like the same, it was all like the early adopter type, you know, all the technology people basically. And now like with the tools that you can use to, I don't know if you remember, but like back then you had to like get all this crazy stuff in a digital wallet and then go on these different exchanges. Like, I don't know what they were, Binance or Bittrex or I think that's what they're called.
Yeah, now you can just use like Square or something, right? Or like
Square. Yeah, you can use Square, or you can Coinbase, like has like every single
Can you do it on Robinhood now?
I think you can do it on Robinhood. So like all these apps that a lot of people are already using, now like they're all like trading and stuff on there. So the amount of people that are buying and trading now versus then is, I forgot, I think it was 10 or 12x more, which is pretty significant because there was a lot before. So that's where a lot of people think that it's going to like get to like gold's level at some point.
Yeah, I was listening to Make Me Smart. It's like the marketplace people. Anyway, they referenced, I guess I haven't looked this up, so whatever. But it was talking about when the stimulus checks hit. I guess like if you look at that time frame, there's like a ton of Bitcoin transactions in the amount of the stimulus checks. So it's like a ton of people just like went and, I mean, similar to what happened with stocks too, I think. But like people, I guess people with certain levels, well, hopefully with certain levels of disposable income or just poor judgment, I guess, were like taking their checks that are supposed to be used for like bills that either they didn't need or they didn't know what to do with them, and they just stuck it in Bitcoin, which is pretty funny. So,
well, if they did that, when was it? Like 6 months ago?
It worked out for them. Well,
it worked out.
They should sell it.
They should sell. Not if it's going to 500,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't quite shake the whole like Bitcoin as digital currency like thing that everyone at some point was talking about. Like, I don't know if we've just moved on from that and no one cares, but that's still like how I think of it, because that's how it was always pitched of like all these cool things, like all these great reasons why it should become like the currency for digital transactions.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be true, but it's just never really happened. So it'll be interesting.
But even if it doesn't do that, I mean, you don't buy and sell things with gold, right? Like it's just an alternative.
No, but I'm saying like, currency. We're just, is this like a hammer looking for a nail or whatever the phrase is? Like, we're just calling it gold now because that fits better how it's actually used, or is it?
I like that narrative better.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you can, but it's like, you can also see like an actual market value.
Yeah, because
gold has a market value and it's been around a long time. So you're like, you feel confident in that market value. So now you can say, oh, well, this is better than gold because it's not a physical object and it's easier to trade, you know, sell and trade. So it's better. And it's secure, so it's better. So then people are like, well, even if it's just like half of gold's market value, like that's still huge and way bigger than where it's at right now. So I don't know. Well,
when Bitcoin hits like a million, I'll just like ask you for like a small cut just for like being on the ride with you, even though I didn't.
No, I don't have that much. I mean, I actually have more of, what is it? Ethereum. Fact that I don't know, like, yeah. I can't even like say it, yeah. Right.
It's like, was like
peak, I don't know if that tells
peak
everybody.
Downloading enough. Coinbase and buying 3 random cryptocurrencies and calling it a day.
Yeah. Well, I see that founder, and when I watch him, or if I just watch anything where he's like speaking, I'm like, this guy's smart as shit. Like, he seems like he really knows. I don't know what he's talking about, but the price is going up on this thing, and also like that's supposed to be like the platform that everybody builds on. So like, I just generally think whenever you're building the platform, like there's probably a lot of value in that. If crypto ever like does like really take off and take over, whoever has like the platform that they're all doing all of this on probably is going to be in a pretty good spot. And that guy sounds smart as shit. So the those two things combined, I'm like, I'm gonna. And also, Bitcoin's really expensive, so I'm just going to put money in that one.
Whatever works.
Whatever works. Well, we finally got another one in the books.
So yeah, we're making it count.
Yeah, cool. I don't know if anybody, we've said this during a couple, but if anybody else has any topics that you would like us to hit on, please let us know on our Twitter handle and we can try to bring it up next time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe in the new year, we'll like dredge up some more guests to drag onto the show. So stay tuned for that.
And maybe do it a little bit more free. Like we've been pretty bad about getting this out every...
Yeah, I think if we can do like once or twice a month feels like a good like goal we can actually hit. So let's start there, see what happens.
Yeah, cool.
Sweet. All right. Well, if you're still here, thanks for sticking with us, and go buy Bitcoin, or maybe don't.
See ya.